commitment. So we are looking at a contract for awakening, page 83 of the Teachings of Inner Ramana. It's interesting to me how far back in the book this contract comes. Inner Ramana did a lot of teaching before he asked me to make a commitment. So let's have a look at this. The inner teacher starts, "What do you think I am teaching you?" And then the student answers, which of course was Regina Dawn Akers. "I understand that you want me to lay the individual thinking mind aside." Inner teacher, "I want you to see that it is nothing and the heart is everything." And I found that to be a very interesting correction, because I was thinking of the thinking mind as if it is something that I am laying aside. And he comes back and says, "I want you to see that it's nothing." I thought that was a very interesting correction. And as I thought about it, that's exactly what self-inquiry does. And we've talked about this before. You know, self-inquiry, let's say before we turn the recorder on, we were talking about habitual eating and how it's the mind that wants to eat the unhealthy food or the mind that wants to eat too much. So, you know, the mind is going off, you know, "I want more," you know, or "I want 8 Oreos, and I want 2 more Oreos," right? And if you look at it with self-inquiry, you can say, what is saying this? And even if the mind screams, "Me," you can say, "Who's me?" And what happens is that the mind just goes silent because there's no one there to answer. The mind is nothing. It's just thoughts. I mean, it's just thought energy, but there's no thing there. And that's what he wants us to see, is that the mind is nothing. And really the other side of that coin is to see that what we are, although it's also a nothing, right now I'm going to call it, we're something, the awareness, the beingness, the isness, the life, right? And the mind is nothing. So how can something be a slave to nothing? You know? So it's not that he wants me to take something and put it aside. He wants me to see that it's nothing. And when I see that it's nothing, I'm free. Right? The thing is, I think it's something. Yeah. Then you have to struggle with it. Yeah, it's nothing. So I want you to see that it is nothing, and the heart is everything. The heart is who you are, and it is where all else springs forth from. When the heart is seen as the source, that which springs forth is like the heart. When it is believed that there is something else that can be the source, that which springs forth is like something else. So if we were reading A Course in Miracles right now, and it was in its own way saying the same thing, it wouldn't be talking about the heart and the mind. It would be talking about the right mind and the wrong mind, right? Here the heart is like the right mind. And so what this is saying is that when I realize I am the heart, or when I realize I am the right mind, and I abide as the right mind, then everything that springs forth from that commitment, all of my thinking, all of my perceiving, all of my talking, all of my behaving, comes from the right mind. If that's who I think I am, if that's what I think I am. If I think I'm the wrong mind, which here would be the chatter, right? Then guess what? My thinking, my speaking, my acting comes from the wrong mind. So, for lack of better words here, which one do I think I am? Because I'm going to live from the one that I think I am. So do I think I'm the mind, or do I think I'm the heart? Do I think I'm the right mind, or do I think I'm the wrong mind? And this is what he's asking me to look at. So, we are here to get clarity on source, just as we are here to get clarity on self, because they are the same. belief in a different self, or misidentification with the I thought is also confusion about source. This is why it is said that the ego is the cause of all suffering. So if I murder someone, right? If I murder someone, a lot of suffering is caused in that murder. Maybe the murdered one is no longer suffering, but the murder of the family. Of course, I, as the murderer, I'm going to suffer. Where did that murder come from? The right mind or the wrong mind? The wrong mind, right? I focused on something about this person and that I didn't like, that I needed to get rid of. I thought I'd be happier with that. Some way I focused on something and I murdered someone, and that's the cause of suffering. So some people might say guns are the cause of suffering, you know, guns are the problem. They might even say people, not guns, but people. They're the ones that pull the triggers. They're the problem. This says, oh, no, 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 no. It's what are you focused on in your mind? It's way before guns. It's way before people who pull triggers. Mm-hmm. What source are you listening to in your mind? Right? This is what you need to look at. And most of us, probably all of us, are not ever going to murder someone, at least not in this lifetime. But have you ever gotten angry and said mean things to a person? Have you ever judged yourself and made yourself miserable?
I never.
No, not Francine. All of that comes from the wrong mind, right? If you look really at suffering, it always comes from the wrong mind. And so if we would abide in the right mind, which is really what the abide in me as I abide in you was pointing to, if we abide in the right mind, we can live a content, joyous, peaceful life. But if we abide in the wrong mind, then suffering is inevitable. Maybe not every moment, but it's inevitable. So here the student asks, what will you teach me now? Show me that I may accept it. And the inner teacher says, your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. Now remember here, the mind is the equivalent of A Course in Miracles' wrong mind. So when he says, when you judge me or you judge life by the mind's standards, he really means the chatter, the personality chatter. And what's really interesting about the personality chatter is my personality chatter and Francine's personality chatter is not the same thing. You know, we have different personality chatter. So we're going to judge the same circumstance differently, right? Because that's the way chatter is. And it's that chatter that's making us blind. It's that chatter that's throwing a blanket over the truth. And the funny thing about it is, and I still don't know why, I just know we do, we believe that chatter more than anything else. You know, isn't that silly? It is insane. And you know, and think about it. They say there's 7.5 billion people on the planet. My chatter is 1/7.5 billion. How right can that be? Why do I think I'm so damn right about everything? It's one opinion out of 7.5 billion, and nobody else agrees with me on everything, right? I'm the only one that has that chatter, that package of chatter that thinks exactly the way it does, and yet it thinks it's right, just like everybody else on earth thinks they're right. So, like Francine said, it's insane. Now, this says, read the above paragraph 6 times. So, here we go. Your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. Your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. Your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. Your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. Your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. Your identification with the mind is the obstacle to knowing the beauty of your true self. It is this identity that makes you blind. When you judge me and when you judge life by the mind's standards, you throw a blanket over the truth and you choose not to see. So we do that just by thinking the chatter in the mind is our thought. And believing everything it says. The students, okay, I have read it 6 times. The inner teacher. It is important that you accept responsibility for your own path. I will lead you most deliberately now, but you must choose to follow just as deliberately. Do you agree to follow me and to do as I ask? Student, yes, I agree to follow you and do as you ask. Inner teacher, this may seem to be putting yourself aside, but it is not. Because the self that you call you is but an illusion of the mind. Therefore, you put nothing aside. The one who chooses to listen to me and follow me is the awakening of your true self. So do not doubt your willingness to listen and follow me. That is you. And by listening to that desire, you listen to yourself. So again, when we listen to resistance, we're listening to the mind. When we listen to our willingness, we're listening to our true self. Outside voices may seem to challenge your desire to follow me. Those outside voices will shout loudest in your own head. But do not question my teaching. Do not ask why. Do not ask for explanations of how it works. Just trust your heart and follow me in devotion and love and desire to know yourself. And it's really interesting. Of course, I'm listening to an inner teacher here, but it's very interesting. The teacher says, don't question my teachings, don't ask me why, don't ask for explanations of how it works. To some people that may sound strict, but actually, if I'm asking these questions, aren't I just thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything he's teaching me to do is to step away from that thinking. You know, so I can't go into that thinking and really be the student of this too. The student. All right, teacher. And what would you have me practice today? The inner teacher. Practice all that I teach. Practice the mantra and surrender and the questioning of the I thought and do it all through devotion. But most importantly, know your own inner devotion to these practices. Know your desire to practice them. Know your love and gratitude that such practices, gifts, should have been given. And know that love, that devotion, that desire is you. And listen to yourself. So yeah, your willingness is you. Your devotion to truth is you. The next message is quite long. But you know what? There's a short message. I think we can skip to page 93. I think it's okay. I think we could do the message on page 93, and then next week we'll come back and do pain and purification. But actually, the message on 93 fits very nicely with this contract. So let's skip over to the grace of the guru. The teacher has come. And the teacher has come at the request of the student. Although the student did not consciously ask for this form of the teacher, this form has been given because this form is a match to the heart of the student. And then I love this next paragraph. Do not doubt that the teacher and student are one. The teacher merely speaks for the student that she may see her own heart more clearly. It is as if I have come to abide in your heart for a time. I have lit a campfire there, and I sit by that fire singing the songs of the heart. But that is only so you can hear yourself more clearly and recognize yourself above the chatter of the mind, so you may return to you there in the center of the heart. This is the grace of the guru. I light a little fire to shine a light on your home. But when you come, you light the chamber fully, for you are the light that is home. And that's that message. But that fits very, very well with this last paragraph that we just had about how your gratitude is you. Your love is you. Your devotion is you. Your desire to know the truth is you. And then here he's saying that, you know, all of these teachings are just kind of lighting that up, lighting up my desire to practice, lighting up my desire for truth, right? And when I come, then I'm the one that really lights up the full chamber. So I don't know how many people think of their devotion as themselves or their willingness as their self. Yeah. But that's your own voice calling you home. That's what that is. That's, you know, that's how your own voice speaks. It speaks as devotion. It speaks as willingness. It doesn't actually use words, even though as a scribe, somehow words came, you know. But for most of us, and even for me now, I don't hear words anymore. It stopped after Inner Ramana. The voice of our true self comes as our willingness, as our desire for truth, as our devotion. That is our voice. So this week, an assignment. You know, well, he says practice everything that I teach. So first of all, I think we should do that. But I think as we do it, whenever we notice willingness, whenever we notice devotion, whenever we notice desire for God, we should just kind of whisper to ourselves, that's me. That's me, right? That's me. That's my voice right there. That willingness is my voice. So just kind of pay it, because this is about noticing. This contract for awakening is about noticing the source and which source I am, right? Am I the chatter in the mind or am I the heart? And so if we just look at that willingness, look at that desire for truth, look at that devotion and say, that's me, we're reminding ourselves which source we really are. And then next week we'll do pain and purification. So I'm going to stop the recording and we can have a bit of silence.